we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices, Western Canada's only radio program focusing on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. And today is Friday, October 5th, 2018. For the next hour, I am your host, Carol Davies McIntosh, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hi there.
We want to wish one of our regular listeners a happy birthday today, Beverly Dobell from Victoria. Beverly is our host, Jen Dobell's mom, and we're happy to say she's just recently become vegan, if only to stop Jen from her constant nagging. But thank you, Beverly, for all you're doing for animals, and have a great birthday weekend.
And we also have another birthday that we wanted to recognize that's also this weekend. Also a regular listener of ours is my sister, Leanna Picard. Thank you, Leanna, for always supporting our show. She's always listening to our archives and catching up from years past. You know, I've got about 10 or 9 years worth of material
of
her,
for
her to catch up on. Yeah, and she's always posting them. And I want to say to Leanna, she is just starting a new group where she lives in Sioux Falls. It's called the Sioux Falls Action for Animals. And she has so many things planned. They've already done some events, and she's going to be planning Compassionate Thanksgiving for her Thanksgiving in the United States this year. So, Leanna, happy birthday, and thank you for all the work that you do, and thank you for your continued support of our show.
Happy birthday, Leanna. Today's show is brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series teaching people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most compelling way to share the wealth, end chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for plant-based economy, because our big, beautiful, edible planet, the food we eat, can change the world. In today's show, we'll talk about wild salmon, farm salmon, and our starving resident orca whales. Many of you may recall the heartbreaking story of the mother orca who carried her dead calf, who had died shortly after birth, with her for over 2 weeks in our waters. Our resident orca whales are struggling, and they're currently endangered to human causes. We will feature an interview with marine biologist Alexandra Morton on this issue. And later in the show, we'll speak with a local animal rights activist, Zoe Pellet, about the new Vancouver Vegan Resource Center. Stay tuned for those interviews within the hour. So this week, it's our Canadian Thanksgiving, a time when many turkeys lose their lives.
Yes, that's right. And it's a sad time for me, because when you do think about that, it's really tragic. I know both you and I have some experience with turkeys. I certainly do, you know. So when you meet a turkey, you definitely aren't going to want to eat him or her, because they are some of the most, I always tell people, they are some of the most affectionate creatures you'll ever see. The turkeys that I visited at farm sanctuaries, such as we have Happy Herd here in Alder Grove, and there's Larry and Mo, and then the other turkey who they thought was a girl, but she's actually a boy. We actually had an interview about this on last year's Thanksgiving show, if you want to check that out on animalvoices.org. But those turkeys, I swear, like they are the ambassadors of the sanctuary there. When you arrive at the property, who's there to greet you?
They come up, and
it's Larry and Mo
together. They come up together. Yeah. They do this little dance with the together, and
they follow you all around.
And they do.
Yeah, they follow you wherever you go,
and they pose for pictures, and they're pretty remarkable, actually.
Yeah, and I know, I was telling Carol before that, I have to update my Facebook profile picture, because every year around Thanksgiving, I always post one of the several photos with various loving turkeys that I have to show people how amazing these animals are. They are beings. They are someones, not some things.
They absolutely are.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, turkey production in North America is huge. 46 million turkeys are killed in the U.S. every every year, and almost 10 million in Canada for Thanksgiving alone. And it's just, you know, it's just such a sad thing when you just disconnect the actual, I mean, most people wouldn't have an experience with a live turkey like we do, but,
that's right. Yeah.
But I mean, you have an experience with your companion animal, cat or dog, and really a turkey is just no different other than the fact that they do have the most amazing, beautifully detailed and colored faces, right?
They do. And, yeah. And they change color too, depending on, I think,
on their mood.
On their mood. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's
they're
right.
Like mood ring turkeys.
So Carol and I won't be celebrating Thanksgiving with a dead turkey on the table. And I actually find this tradition to be rather, it's rather ironic. Like it's, you're there to bring people together to celebrate things that you're grateful for. And I always say when I have, when I've hosted a compassionate Thanksgiving, which we've done for the last about the eighth year now in Vancouver. We have a big event coming up with over 200 people to be in attendance. I always say at these events, you know, thank you for coming because we're here to celebrate and be grateful for life and not death. You know, we don't want to be here to celebrate the misery that came with this corpse that might lie on most people's table. And Carol, what do you think about celebrating a compassionate Thanksgiving rather than Thanksgiving that celebrates death?
Well, I'm very fortunate because my family are all plant-based eaters, and some of them don't like to call themselves vegans for political reasons, but we don't eat any animals or animal products in our family, and so I don't have to worry about that anymore. But there was a time when I did, and then it was a decision whether to go to the dinner at all. What I decided, and everybody's different, everybody's family's different, but what I decided was that I would go and I would try to show my compassion, not just to the animals, but to the people that are there, and to try to meet them where they were about, and to talk to them about more compassion and being thankful for our lives, and their, and the animals would also be thankful for their lives.
Right. So this year I do encourage people to celebrate a compassionate Thanksgiving where there are no dead animal bodies that experience a lot of pain and misery and torture to get where they are if they land on your dinner table. And stay tuned later in our event segment. We'll speak to you about our compassionate Thanksgiving that's coming up in Vancouver, and there's one in Victoria as well.
Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM, has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
Alexandra Morton is a very well-known Canadian-American activist, author, and marine biologist who's dedicated nearly 40 years of her life to restoring the balance between the people and the wild salmon off the coast of British Columbia. She was also featured in the 2015 documentary Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered. Alexandra began studying whales in a remote inlet off the west coast of Canada in 1984, and when the salmon farms first appeared, the community was told this would be good for them. However, toxic algae blooms and sea lice developed, and the wild salmon die-off began. The whales that Alexandra was studying left, the salmon populations crashed, and then her beloved community began to fade away. Today, there are only 8 people left in the village, and 27 Norwegian-owned salmon feedlots dot the area. To this day, Alexandra works tirelessly to defend the orcas, wild salmon, and our ocean. Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Such an honor to have you on. So most people I meet have very little knowledge of this issue, but for years you've been documenting evidence of the harmful effects of fish farms on our wild salmon, which are a keystone species. Can you explain what a keystone species is and give our listeners an overview of why fish farms are so destructive to them?
So keystone means that if you remove it, you know, the whole thing crashes down. It'd be like taking out an essential brick out of the side of your house and just watching it crumble. Now, the problem with salmon farms is that they're feedlots, and so feedlots are highly unnatural. They crowd animals together, put them in an unnatural diet, and this allows viruses, bacteria, and parasites to absolutely explode in population. The problem with salmon farms is they're in net pens. So the fish stay in, but all of the pathogens just pour out. And so for young wild salmon migrating on this coast right now, it's similar to taking your child to an infectious disease ward on her way to school. The pathogens, you know, bathe the fish, and then the fish go on up the coast and run into other fish. So it really is a recipe for disaster.
And is anything being done by the fish farms to control the pathogens, if that's even possible? This might be an argument some people come up with as a way to deal with it.
Well, so they have tried to control sea lice. There's an escalating drug war between the sea louse and the salmon farmers that is being waged and lost in Norway, Scotland, Ireland, eastern Canada, the Faroe Islands, Chile, and in British Columbia. And then when it comes to viruses, they change tax because there's nothing they can do to deal with the viruses. They just try to pretend that the viruses are not having an impact. But the research is catching up on them, and I believe that the impact is catastrophic due to viruses from salmon farms.
Mm-hmm. So for years, you've been presenting your research to the attention of government and industry, attending salmon farm AGMs, engaging in government processes, and have written countless letters and have been in court. And you were quoted as saying, "All I was looking for from government, both bureaucrats and politicians, was acknowledgement of the statement, we see the problem and here's what we're going to do about it." But nobody stepped forward. So why do you think you're having to fight so hard to save our wild salmon? Isn't it the government's best interest to listen to scientists like you?
Well, this is a good question. I think it is in the government's best interest, but more and more I realize that the ones really in control are the companies. And, of course, people dealing with the impact of mining and oil pipelines and drilling and fracking and logging, they're running into the same problem. So government is just kind of shying away from the issue. They're like a young horse that is just startled by everything, and they start going in circles, making no sense whatsoever. They jeopardize their own careers. But there's something under the surface here with this problem that I can't see. And so, like right now, the Canadian Minister of Fisheries is in court holding hands with the two Norwegian companies that are operating here to break the laws of Canada to allow this Piscine Rio virus to be put into the water in these infected farm salmon. And they're fighting First Nations, the Indigenous people, and they're fighting myself on this. I already won this lawsuit in 2015, but the Minister of Fisheries just refuses to acknowledge that court decision. And so behavior like this not only threatens our natural world, but also our democracy. And it's a very big deal. It's an alarming situation that so many biologists are in right now, where we're trying to deal with these problems in a way that will benefit government and society. But there's this certain madness on the land where somehow share price and investors and shareholders are more important than life itself. And I really, you know, I have to wonder, do these people have children? You know, I mean, they're on the same planet as the rest of us, and they're causing the unraveling of everything that keeps us alive. So, you know, while I pulled on this little thread in the beginning and I thought, oh, yes, the government will understand, they've made a problem, made a mistake here, and there are solutions, and they'll move towards them. But instead, as I pull, it just goes deeper and deeper, and now it's like this taproot down into the global markets, and there's a lot of us going on it, but so far we're just not making enough of a difference.
So if you were to actually be able to control the government, what would your fantasy be? What would you like to see them do?
Oh, I would say, here, boys and girls, you can keep farming, but you got to get into a tank, and we'll help you. We'll try to make that easier for you. We're going to keep an eye on you, but we'll help you. Then I would go to Dr. Christy Miller, who is a scientist in our government, who has learned how to read the immune system of salmon, and therefore allowing the fish to actually talk to us. And so by sampling fish up and down this coast, using all the universities, the First Nation fisheries teams, the stream cleaners that are already out there, get everybody to sample the fish in the identical manner, the same way, and look at what the salmon are saying to us, because they can tell us, is the water too warm? Is it chemical pollution? Is it a virus that's killing them? Or are they fine? And by reading this all the way along the way, we can go, oh, wow, they're having a problem right here with this chemical pollution. Let me see. Oh, maybe it's this pipe. Let's talk to the municipal government and change that. And then the next year, we can go back and we can ask the salmon again, did we make it better for you or not? And so this allows the fish themselves to guide us. And all we need to do is change our behavior a little bit. And I think if people knew in a town, for example, that they were harming 60% of the Fraser River sockeye salmon passing their town, they would be moved to change that. So, you know, science is a tremendous tool if we would only just use it in a fearless manner.
Well, that just sounds like such an easy solution, where the current companies that are making money off of the netted salmon farms would still be able to profit. Isn't that right?
Yes, but it costs a little bit more, and the startup costs in particular are much bigger. I mean, we would all love to be able to just throw everything into the ocean that we don't want and think that it goes away, and that's what they're being allowed to do. They're the only farmers that never, never shovel their manure, and they're making tons per day per farm. So as long as it's cheaper, their laws, their corporate laws, actually guide them in that they have to do it the cheapest way. So this is where you need a government with a backbone to say, oh, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. Across the board, you all are going to have to make this change, and that would invite investment, and we're going to put money into restoring the wild salmon so that you end up with aquaculture, whales, wild salmon, thriving First Nation coastal communities, and on and on and on. It is a way we have to go on this planet. We have to learn how to fit in. Mm-hmm. We're like three-year-olds running around just breaking stuff, mm-hmm. not understanding that everybody else's needs are just as great and real as our own. And we need to grow up right now and get on this.
Do you actually have any hope that your dream will come true?
Not really, but miracles happen. Mm-hmm. You know, and the real elders that I know, the women in their 80s and 90s, they'll say to me, oh, but listen, dear, we couldn't vote.
Right.
You know, yeah. There were terrible things that happened that we got over. Mm-hmm. And so in my lifetime, I don't see potential for change. But if you go to the next generation or two above me, they will tell you that we can change. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do see signs of it. I mean, one of the most remarkable things that is going on this planet right now is the organic food movement, for example. People are making the decision that they don't believe government, and for better or worse, I know there's lots of wiggle room in the classification of something being organic. But people are thinking for themselves, and that's because they know it directly affects their children. And if we need to get to that state, and, you know, I think we are. I mean, activism in British Columbia and I think around the world has changed remarkably, and I'm engaging in it because it's no longer big societies. It's mothers and grandmothers like myself and youth, and it's everybody, because all we're fighting for is a chance to create a world that will be good for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears just a little bit right now. The world's been keeping a watchful eye on the starving resident orca whales on our coast, especially after the emotional weeks-long mourning of a mother orca carrying around her dead calf. Can you explain to our listeners what salmon farms have to do with starving orcas and what you propose as a viable solution for the individuals who are hearing this podcast?
So the salmon farming industry in British Columbia and in Washington State are heavily infected with a virus called Piscine Reovirus. 80% of farmed salmon in BC have it. 95% of the salmon that are in the market have it, the farmed salmon. This virus is known to infect Chinook salmon, red blood cells, and causes those cells to explode. The virus gets in the cells and it uses them to replicate until the cell becomes so full of virus that it bursts. And this causes organ failure. So when you think about it, Chinook salmon are the primary food of the southern resident orca. And there's 120 salmon farms on the migration route of the wild salmon as they pass through British Columbia, and 80% of them have this virus. So billions of these viruses are pouring out into the narrow waterways. Chinook salmon are going along, they're breathing the virus in. It's getting into their bloodstream. It's causing their cells to explode. Washington State made an enormous step. They decided to phase out Atlantic salmon farms in 4 years. But then earlier this year, they stopped a shipment of 800,000 Piscine Reovirus-infected Atlantic salmon from going into a farm in Puget Sound. But here in Canada, the Minister of Fisheries has the opposite approach, and even though his own scientists disagree with him, he is in court fighting to allow this virus to continue to exist in the farm salmon. Because if they cannot use infected fish, they can't farm legally in British Columbia. They're so infected. So what you can do as an individual, number one, stop eating farm salmon. I know it sounds like a good idea. The salmon's in a farm. It's not a wild salmon, so it's going to protect wild salmon. No, that's wrong, unless it was raised in a tank. Second, you need to all contact the Premier of British Columbia. His name is John Horgan. And his email address is premier@gov.bc.ca. Just Google email for Premier of British Columbia and tell him not to renew the 10 years that these salmon farms are sitting on. So he is the landlord of the industry, and he's in talks with First Nations, because last year a group of us spent 280 days on the salmon farms to bring it to a head. The government has to stop putting these farms where the indigenous people are saying no. And so while the industry needs to get out of all of the water, the point where we're going to be able to start this process is where the indigenous people have taken such a powerful stand, because they have rights to their fish. They have rights to their culture, which depend on salmon. So you could be a big part of what needs to happen here for the southern residents, because, I mean, we hear in the news today that a male scoter is also looking weak and emaciated. Scoter's sister is pregnant, along with several other whales in the population, the southern resident whales, according to people that are looking at them with drones. And there's research out there that says 67% of pregnancies in this group of whales are not successful because of a lack of Chinook salmon from the Fraser and the Columbia rivers. So, I mean, there's other ideas out there. Remove the dams from the Snake River, and I imagine that is also a good idea, although a much longer-term plan. But getting these diseased Atlantic salmon out of the water right now would have an impact immediately on the next generation of Chinook that go to sea. I just can't think of anything that would have a bigger impact, a favorable impact for these whales. And, you know, it's really a remarkable situation, and it might be the first time in the history of humanity that we are on a first-name basis with a group of animals who we are causing their extinction. It's not just the whales are vanishing, it's these individual whales. And we're caught up in the mourning. And, you know, when you think about little Scarlett, J50, who died recently, she was lagging further and further behind her family, which must have been terrifying for a young whale like that.
Yeah.
You know, her whole, everything she is tells her to stay with mom. And there she is, she's too weak to keep up. So we are watching this, and we are emotionally involved. We know them, we know who their parents are. You know, we're watching this. And if we can't make a stand and make a difference in their lives, this is not a good sign for us as a species. This really is not just about whales. It's about our children and us today being able to learn how to live on this planet.
That is a heartbreaking thought, that little baby not keeping up. Something else I wanted you to comment on, if you don't mind, is the impact of tanker traffic noise on whales.
Yes. Well, so when I first moved up to the Broughton Archipelago, it was a perfect place to study whales. It was so quiet. It was amazing. And then the salmon farming industry came in, and in the 1990s, in the mid-1990s, they began to play very loud sounds called acoustic harassment devices to keep the seals away. And one by one, I watched the resident whale families come in, these are the northern residents, come in and never come back, ever. Since 1995, have not been back.
Wow.
So this is a warning that the whales will accommodate us for so long, and then at a certain point, they just can't. And we know that noise is a problem for them. And we know that adding to that noise increases that problem. And we know that they are such on the edge of extinction that they can't take another problem. We also know that oil has to stay in the ground for us to survive. So it really is a win-win situation. Alberta's just going to have to figure out something else to do with that oil because adding the tanker noise to the whales causes a chain reaction, which results also in climate change. It just cannot go forward.
I'm curious if you've spoken to John Horgan or Trudeau directly about these issues.
No. They don't allow people like me who really know what's going on generally to talk to government at those levels.
Have you had any email responses to letters even?
I get email responses from the Minister of Fisheries, which are so poorly informed. I mean, I'm sure he's not writing them, and whoever is writing them is throwing him under the bus. I get the sort of pat responses. Mm-hmm. But I'm in court, and I'm doing the science, and I'm doing the activism, mm-hmm. and I'm talking to people. There is always something you can do, because I can see change is not going to happen from the top, because I think what happens is good people can get into office, and then they realize, oh my gosh, there's no room to move. They're tied up with, you know, deals and trade wars and all kinds of things that we don't know anything about. And I think that's what's going on here in British Columbia. There's some relationship between Canada and Norway that I simply don't understand. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, because none of this makes sense. There are solutions that would make government look really good, increase their chances of getting reelected, which, you know, for many politicians seems to be the thing that they worry about the most. But they don't take them. They're sacrificing their own careers to this madness that is on us. And so it's got to happen at the ground level with you and me, everybody who's listening, everybody we know. If you don't buy farm salmon that's not raised in a tank, they're going to change. They always do that. You know, they put out products. Nobody wants them. They don't keep making them. So, I mean, ultimately, the individual has the most power, and yet we are so trained to believe. I get people all the time that say, oh, what can I do? I'm just an average person. And I'm like, I'm an average person. I don't have any superpowers. We're all average. Mm-hmm. And yet it's the average person that has the power. I tell people the power of one is all we have, but we all have it.
I like that.
That's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's everybody.
Well, we are a vegan radio program. You may not have heard about us until today, but it's Animal Voices, because we speak for the animals who have no voice for themselves that actually gets heard. And so to many of our listeners who are vegan, and maybe they have friends who will hear this podcast who are not, what would you say about even boycotting wild salmon so that there's more available for the whales?
Well, it's not a bad idea, and people are boycotting the Chinook salmon to make sure there's enough. The thing about wild salmon is Alaska has no salmon farms, and they just had a record harvest. So there are a lot of salmon, and there could be a lot of salmon for the whales this coast. But veganism, you know, and not eating meat, as I understand it, is the biggest thing we could do to reverse climate change. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is definitely a fabulous thing to do.
Great. That's an awesome note to end on from Alexandra Morton herself. Thank you so much for that endorsement of a vegan lifestyle. We've been speaking with Alexandra Morton, marine biologist. Where do you live? Alert Bay, I think. Is that where you are?
I live near Alert Bay.
Mm-hmm. Suntuna. I can never say it. Suntuna.
No, you got it pretty good. You got it well. Yeah.
So where can our listeners follow everything that you're up to?
Follow me on Facebook. That's the best place. It's a very active discussion there. I have two Facebook pages. And so, yeah, follow me there. You'll see quite a conversation. And I post everything that is going on. And I always post what people can do, because I can't do this myself. I got that message now, 30 years later. It really is up to all of you.
And it's such a stressful job, and you keep at it. Thank you so much, Alexandra. I'm a massage therapist. If you're ever in Vancouver, you get a free massage. Please come see me.
Oh, my gosh. I definitely will.
Yeah, every hardcore activist gets a free massage from me. I'm so grateful for all the stress you endure for everybody's benefit. Thank you so much.
Oh, that's very generous. Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
I'll
keep you posted.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Great. Okay, bye.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Today I'm speaking with a Vancouver rights animal activist, Zoe Pellet. Hi, Zoe.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
So I've known you personally through the Vancouver animal rights community for several years now, but why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your activism, and your vegan journey?
My vegan journey, as I know it does for some, actually started with my becoming vegetarian. So myself, I became vegetarian when I was about 12, as did the rest of my family, and that was rooted in all of us discovering PETA and, you know, becoming privy to the knowledge of what actually happens in the animal industries. A couple of years went by, and learning more about what happens in those industries, coupled with the fact that I have always identified as an animal lover and an animal advocate, it just made very clear and very perfect sense that to not be vegan and to be vegetarian for the reasons I stated I was did not make sense. So I switched to vegan, and I have been vegan for 9 years this December.
That's a long time. Awesome.
Yes, it is.
And just before we started this recording, you and I were talking about how we are trying to find a way to advocate for animals in everyday scenarios. And you mentioned that you took an opportunity at the Oak Jeff film screening to talk about animals when during the Q&A period people were more focused on questions around the making of the film. Can you tell us about that?
Definitely. And I do really think there is great importance and great significance in looking for activism in all opportunities, especially the ones where we may not necessarily see it immediately. I think being open to taking those opportunities is really, really crucial to the movement itself. So I was at a screening of Okja. During the Q&A, the moderator, I don't know in his defense if it was significant or purposeful or not, but was avoiding any questions pertaining to the actual content of the film, which, as we all know, mirrors very perfectly the realities of what happened in the animal agricultural industries. And as an animal activist, as an attendee, that was very frustrating to observe, pardon the term, the fact that there was a very significant elephant in the room. So I was able to get a hold of a microphone and do an impromptu speak out, and basically just touched on the fact that Okja is framed as a fictional film, but in actuality, as we both know, it is nonfiction. It is reality, and it is a very accurate picture of what happens in the industry to millions of animals every single day.
Mm-hmm. And how did that go?
It was amazing. It was definitely well received by a couple of folks in the audience with applause. So it's safe to assume those were our fellow vegans and activists. And something I really appreciated about it specifically is that after the movie actually finished and we were all in the lobby, a couple of the patrons came up to me after and asked a lot of questions. And that's a great example of why it's important to take those opportunities, because they were very honest in sharing that they didn't really know a lot about the industries and about the truth, and they were open to learning more.
Great. And so I'm having you on the show today mostly to talk about an exciting project that's coming up this weekend. I love the idea, but let's have you tell our audience about this.
Thank you. So we are talking about the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center. So the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center is comprised of a couple of different elements. So we're talking about a resource center. So this is a space that has information, books, videos, pamphlets, etc., available from over 30 groups who are representing different components of the animal rights movement or different parts of veganism. We have a community library happening at the center, so that's also representing different components of veganism and animal activism, key folks in the movement, critical theory. We have a peer support program at the center. So every single day the center is open, we will have a volunteer on site from the community who has been vegan for several years and is basically there to support anyone visiting who has any questions and would prefer to speak with someone in person as opposed to diving into the vast realm of the internet. And last but not least, we're also going to have some program events and features which are happening all throughout the center programming as well.
That's awesome. So can you tell us about some of the events that are happening?
Definitely. So the first one kicks off on Friday night, and this is a collaborative dinner that we are doing with the Juice Truck and also with Little Mountain Shop. So we are hosting a dinner called A Very Vegan Thanksgiving, which features a few of our incredible local vegan chefs. We have Lee Dimla, Alina Bobby, and Karen McCaffey. So we are hosting a dinner that will be a creative vegan twist on all of the classic dishes and mains that we see at Thanksgiving dinner. But of course, our dishes will involve no animal suffering or no animal death. And partial proceeds from that dinner is going to support Gertie the Turkey lives at Home for Hoop Sanctuary on Vancouver Island.
Oh, Gertie the Turkey.
Gertie the Turkey. So we wanted to have turkey involved in our dinner, but we wanted to have it involved in a way in which the turkey was still alive and, of course, respected as a sentient being, which they are. And that is how all folks should be regarding turkeys.
For those who don't know turkeys well, they are very personable and they really do follow people around on the farm. And there's just so much to them. They're not just some mindless little animal that we can easily, you know, throw into an oven for a celebratory event and think nothing of their sentience.
100%. They have such unique personalities. I'm sure a lot of the folks who listen to the show are familiar with Larry and Mo, who are the two turkeys who live out at Happy Herd in Alder Grove. And Larry and Mo love to be with people. They love to follow you around. They love to be cuddled. They are very, very similar to a lot of the animals that we live with, dogs and cats. And, you know, this is a conversation that comes up a lot, is we get used to assuming that certain animals in our lives are meant for certain things. And that includes the animals that live inside with us as our quote-unquote pets and companion animals, and the animals that we have been taught are those that we consume or the byproducts from those animals. And in actuality, there are so many similarities between all of those lovely creatures, as you know. So we really need to work to dismantle those categories.
Absolutely. We've had Ellie Lax from The Gentle Barn on our show before, and she was talking about a turkey who loved music. And so wherever the radio was placed down in the barn, the turkey would follow and close its eyes, or his or her eyes, and sway back and forth to the music.
Yes.
And Ellie actually had a young visitor, child, on the farm who was not speaking, had not spoken in, I think, over a year due to an earthquake that traumatized this child. And by coming to the farm on a regular basis to meet this turkey, Ellie said, "Let's sing to the turkey," because the turkey finds that healing. And that was how this child started talking again.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that amazing that animals have that ability to heal us, yet most of us put them in the oven on Thanksgiving and Christmas? So I just hope people can hear these stories about turkeys and change their minds. And if you live in Vancouver this weekend, come and check out the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center. And Zoe, where can people find out more about that?
So at this point, we have a website in the works, which is very exciting. Because it has not launched yet, the most information is actually available via Instagram. And my Instagram is at Zoe Marg, so that's Zoe Marg. And then the website for Little Mountain Space, so that is the venue that's hosting the Resource Center and also hosting the vegan pop-up shop happening in correlation with the center, and that is littlemountain.space.
And, of course, we always have events posted on the Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook page. Thank you so much, Zoe, for what you're doing. I think it's fantastic, and I'm really excited to hear the stories afterwards of how you were able to veganize some local Vancouverites.
I cannot wait to veganize all Vancouverites.
I hope you take some videos of people maybe talking about how the Resource Center impacted them and post those up online. We'd love to share those.
Definitely. It's on the radar for sure.
Great. Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, thank you for those two interviews, Jen Dobell, our host, who is away today but recorded those in advance. Great interviews. So we have some news to share with you. And Carol, are you familiar with Miyoko's Kitchen, her cheeses? She's based out of San Francisco.
A little bit. I'm dying to try her butter.
The butter is amazing. I have some in my fridge right now. I could have brought it for you if you had told me. So, yeah. So we enjoy Miyoko's products. I think she makes some of the best best cheeses out there. And the only problem is that they're not readily available in Vancouver, but that's set to change soon. So it was announced this week that Nestle, the world's largest food and beverage corporation, they have announced a partnership between its U.S. branch and the vegan artisanal cheese startup Miyoko's Kitchen in order to meet a rising demand for plant-based food. The multinational corporation says that the California-based brand is among the state's fastest-growing companies. Miyoko's Kitchen meets a rising demand for dairy-free products and disrupts traditional animal-based food industries with her unique vegan products like cashew and coconut oil, vegan cheeses, and plant-based European-style cultured butter. As you said, this butter is like when I first tasted it at the Seattle Veg Fest last year, she was demoing it there. I just kept going back like five times for butter. Who eats butter on crackers or on bread? Like, I don't. Like, it was that good. It was so tasty. And her other cheese products are amazing. You can buy them just in Vancouver from Vegan Supply, but soon, I mean, in the States, you can buy them at lots of stores, and it's going to be spread wider. So I think this presents a great opportunity for really getting these amazing vegan products out there. Miyoko herself, Miyoko Shinner, she's an ethical vegan. She runs an animal sanctuary that she lives on in California, and she has this amazing company. But I think we need, like, these vegan businesses, they need the large distributors. So.
That's right. That's right.
So, yeah. So
she's smart to partner with them.
I think so, for sure. There was some news sources that was saying that Nestle had bought out Miyoko's Kitchen, but that is not true. That is not a fact. They are just simply partnering. So I look forward to seeing Miyoko's hopefully in Canada soon. I know they are planning that. I was speaking with them in the summer, and I just hope it comes, and I hope that we'll be able to buy it in all of our stores here in Vancouver, like you can buy other vegan products. So we have an emergency call to action for our Orca loving listeners. Please go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, or our website, animalvoices.org, on the post for today's show to sign a petition to save our southern resident orca whales. The southern resident orcas are endangered and require immediate protection, or they will disappear forever. These iconic, intelligent beings live in family pods their entire lives and contribute to the fragile balance of our marine ecosystems. There are now only 75 southern residents remaining, and the time to act is running out. This petition urges Fisheries and Oceans Minister Jonathan Wilkinson and Environment Minister Catherine McKenna to take immediate action and implement an emergency order to protect the endangered southern resident orcas who live off British Columbia and Washington State. So this emergency order should guarantee safe, abundant, and healthy food, stop vessel traffic, noise, and harassment. I know that's a big problem. Prevent and clean up pollution, enforce marine protected areas, and stop invasive experiments and cumulative impact of research on orcas. This is something I didn't know before, that they do satellite darting or spearing and skin biopsies on the orcas, and that needs to stop because that can be a pathway for infections and cause deaths. So the southern orcas are counting on us to take action. Please sign and share the petition to ensure their survival. Again, this petition is on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and on our website, animalvoices.org. And some news on the bill to end whale and dolphin captivity in Canada. You might have been wondering what happened to Bill S-203. We reported about that on the show. That was about 3 years ago.
It's been sitting around for a while.
Yeah, it's been sitting on the table, or it's been hiding in the back of the parliamentary cabinet now since December 2015. And this bill is to ban whale and dolphin captivity in Canada. So it's really, you know, this is a bill that it's set to pass. However, the Conservative government, some of their senators have actually tried to put in some amendments into this bill. Number one, a sub-amendment to, this amendment is to ban whale and dolphin captivity in Canada, right? So where are these dolphins and whales kept captive? Two places.
Aquariums.
The Vancouver Aquarium. Well, in Canada, it's just two places. It's the Vancouver Aquarium and it's Marineland. So there's a sub-amendment to this bill to exclude the Vancouver Aquarium from being covered, and then also to exclude Marineland. So does that make any sense at all?
It makes no sense.
Yeah, so what is that doing? Essentially, it's killing this bill because it would have like zero power to actually do what it's meant to do, and it's meant to target those places. So hopefully that will, I mean, that's, we're going to be covering that on the show soon, I hope, because I think it's time for them to start addressing this bill, and now that they're back from their summer break, they can work on this again. So that's it for our news today. And I do have some events to cover as well. On October 16th, there is an event being put on by the Vancouver Public Library from 7 to 9:30 p.m. It's called Animals and Ethics in the 21st Century, and this is the first of a series of speaker events that will be hosted by the Vancouver Humane Society. This event on October the 16th will feature Jeffrey Cohen from the organization called Jewish Veg. It's only $5 for admission and aimed at a general audience. This talk will explore what the Torah, the Bible, and rabbis tell us about our relationship with animals and what it means for our lives today. Then, as we were just speaking with Zoe in our last interview, the Vancouver Resource Center will be making its debut for its first edition starting today. It just opened actually just 2 hours ago, and it's going to run through to October the 8th for this edition. So this is a Little Mountain pop-up shop. They're featuring events by the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center. And the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center is an inclusive community space where people can learn about various components about veganism. It welcomes those at all stages of the vegan journey, offering information pertaining to food and cooking, the animal industries, activism, and getting involved, and health and wellness, and more. The VVRC will be comprised of a resource center, a community library, hosted programmed events, and have volunteers and peer support available for visitors. And this resource center is being supported by many of the nonprofit animal-related animal advocacy groups in Vancouver, including us, Animal Voices.
Yay.
So the other day, in the spirit of sharing resources that need to get out there to people and perhaps not staying in my living room on a bookshelf, I cleared out about 90% of my animal rights-related books. I have many of them. I have to say, all those interviews that I've done over the past 9 years where I've interviewed an author about their animal rights book, it ends up on my shelf. And then I go, oh, I'll be able to lend that to someone. But it never happens.
But now you can.
Yeah, so the Vancouver Vegan Resource Center has all those books. I donated 10 years worth of my old Veg News magazines, and those magazines are gold, I have to say. So, and lots of brochures and flyers there too. The VVRC will be active, like I said, starting today. It's 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and that goes until Monday, October the 8th. And I want to talk about one event that they're hosting tomorrow evening that I'll be going to, and I find it to be really interesting. It's going to be called First, it's presented by the Peace People Project, and it's a talk called Zero Waste, Veganize Your Life. So there will be a discussion there about zero waste veganism, and Atasha Lobsinger, she'll be sharing information about the clothing industry, animal agriculture, toxic materials like plastic and styrofoam, biking, walking, and using public transportation, thrift life, and more. So that is a talk from 7 till 8:30 p.m. That's tomorrow on Saturday, October the 6th at 4386 Main Street. So you wanted to talk about Roaring Silence. Tell us about that.
I just wanted to tell you a little bit about the second annual Roaring Silence March is being held on October 20th at noon. And the meetup place is behind the Vancouver Art Gallery on Robson Street. So there'll be a link on our website at Animal Voices. That you can see
on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Right.
Thank you for that. So as we were speaking about before, the annual Compassionate Thanksgiving potluck celebration that we used to host here at Animal Voices is being hosted now by Meatless Meetup, who I also volunteer with, and Vegans of UBC this year. That's happening this year on Monday, October the 8th at the Great Hall in the Student Union Building at UBC on the second floor. Doors open at 4:30 p.m. And this is a chance, like we were talking about before, to celebrate compassion and bounty and gratitude for all the wonderful plant-based foods that we have, and for the right to life, and for the right for turkeys and other animals to be free and live out their lives and not be tortured and murdered. So if you want to spend your Thanksgiving with 200 to 300 other like-minded people. I invite you to join us at this event. It's going to be really good. It is every year. Bring some cash. There's going to be lots of great raffle prizes. There is a small entry fee by donation, and any profits that we make from this is going to be going to Earth Save Canada's school talks. They're getting into schools and they're educating our children, people, young people, about how to live a plant-based diet and why it's good for our health, the environment, and the earth. So yeah, if you want to find out more about that, go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. And if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced in the show, please send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you, Allison. That sounds like a great celebration.
It's going to be, yeah. Always is every year.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show on Friday, October 12th, when Elise Jacobson will have Asha Weldon and Jessica Fife from Kula Foods. Kula Foods is a new pop-up shop that has vegan African foods, and I'm looking forward to tasting that. And Allison, you had something?
Yes, something that I forgot to mention before when I was sending out a birthday greeting to my sister, who turns 41 tomorrow. She's a regular listener and supporter of Animal Voices, and I just remembered that she has a online fundraiser for us, Animal Voices.
Yay.
For her birthday on Facebook. So if you want to support my sister in Animal Voices to raise some funds to keep us on the air, because we are all volunteer run and we're listener supported, please go to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can see the link there to donate at.
Excellent. Today's show was brought to you by Edible Planet, a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace. Now's the time for a plant-based economy, because on our big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. There will be a petition link on our Facebook page.
There is, yeah. So there's a link right now.
There's a link right now to gogigo.ca, which will have a petition listed there about using desiccants on our crops in Canada. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online, so give us a shout at animalvoices.org, or you can stream shows there or download the shows as podcasts, read the show blog with detailed links, and subscribe via iTunes. And stay in touch with us on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver. Join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. You can also send us suggestions and comments about the show, Facebook, or email radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're going to be closing today's show with a song, Watching the Wheels by John Lennon. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals, especially turkeys, this weekend.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Shadows on the wall. Don't you miss the big time ball?